If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. Prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
I'm not exactly a tech genius, but I knew one thing for sure. If I wanted my small business to crush it, I needed a website that worked like a pro, and I needed it yesterday. Lucky for me, Bluehost made it ridiculously easy. With their AI design tools, building my website was a walk in the park. I could customize, optimize, and monetize everything exactly how I wanted. In just a few minutes, I had a secure site up and running. I couldn't believe how straightforward it was. And getting found online? Bluehost helped me with that too. I perfected my keywords and meta descriptions with their search engine tools. The AI even gave me suggestions to improve my pages. Now I can sit back, relax, and focus on my customers, while my website continues to rank higher and higher on Google. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, I wasn't worried about taking the plunge, and now I'm so glad I did. Head over to Bluehost.com and build something special today.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on this very special episode where we are actually interviewing Michael Bayer, the director of Vanished, the Heather Elvis Case. This is a three-part documentary that is currently streaming on Amazon Prime and Apple TV. Thank you so much, Michael, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Kona.
Yeah, so I watched the documentary all in one day, so all three episodes, and I loved it. I didn't mention this to you before we started recording. So the way our podcast works, I co-host it with my husband, but he doesn't know anything about the stories going into it. So the way we're going to be doing this is we're actually going to be doing our own episode on Heather's case, and then we'll air your interview and talk about the documentary as a bonus episode to kind of go along with it. Because even though there has been a trial, which of course we're going to talk about, this case is still technically unsolved in that Heather Elvis is still missing.
Absolutely. Yep. And I think that's what makes that makes the case interesting. You know, that's what makes the case interesting.
It does, because it's like a partial form of justice. You know, two people are behind bars, not to give away too much, but two people are behind bars, but we don't have Heather. And there's still so many unanswered questions in terms of the documentary, perhaps other people who may or may not have been involved who haven't served any form of justice.
That's correct. I think that is what makes this story so interesting, is the fact that she's still missing. But we have a very strong opinion, you could say, about who did it, maybe who else was involved. But there are still a lot of questions that are left unanswered. And I think the documentary did a really good job of exploring those options as well, because the story has been covered by Dateline twice. It has been on Investigation Discovery. It's been on many podcasts. It's a very interesting story, I think, just because of the people who were involved in it. So people are still wondering, you know, what happened to Heather. So I feel like that's why we made the documentary, and also for the online harassment angles, what we took.
Yeah. And that really was the like one of the most interesting pieces to me. So before we get into all of that, let's kind of back up just real quick. Let's get into a quick overview of Heather's case, if you would.
So she's a 20-year-old girl who went missing in South Carolina at the end of 2013. Investigation and the search for her unfolded over the years after, you know, 2014, 2015. I think the trial for the final trial was in 2018 or 2019, and they're still going through the appeals process. So she was a 20-year-old girl who was from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. She was a local girl. It wasn't a transient person who was visiting. She was an individual who worked at a restaurant called the Tilted Kilt. She ended up meeting the maintenance guy there who fixed things and stuff like that and ended up sparking up a relationship with him. He was a married man who was older than Heather was. His name was Sidney Moore. He had a wife. Her name was Tammy. So then this quote-unquote love triangle unfolded. A lot of people around the restaurant knew about this. Her parents did not know about it. So as this went on, this thing went on for a few months. Then his wife ended up finding out. And that's when everything kind of imploded and he ended up breaking up with her. However, we don't have certain proof for this, but what a big part of why investigators think she went missing was they thought she was pregnant. So there's all this stuff, and you can see in the documentary about, you know, pregnancy tests and how that comes into play. But that's a big part of the prosecution's motive in this case.
For those who are listening to this right now, who have been listening to our show for a while, that really struck a chord with me as soon as the whole pregnancy aspect of that was revealed, because we've covered a number of cases on our show that are very similar in that a woman gets pregnant. The man that she's involved with is involved with somebody else, you know, whatever the case may be, whether, you know, they're married or have a girlfriend, and then she mysteriously goes missing. So Akia Eggleston, Kiara Coles, I mean, the list goes on. And unfortunately, this is, you know, not a horribly common occurrence, but it's not as uncommon as I think we would want it to be. But yeah, so I was really curious from you with all of the cases out there, what drew you to Heather's case? What made you get involved in this?
There's two things. The first thing was the online harassment aspect of it. I thought that's a topic that was never covered, an angle that was never covered by any of the other segments that did cover the story before. Like I mentioned, it was covered in many different podcasts and, you know, Dateline and everything else. No one really talked about this angle of the story, which I thought was very important. It was around the time social media just started getting, you know, just started getting going. 2013, 2014, this is when people were just getting on Facebook.
It was like the heyday, I feel like.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think people now, they understand more about social media. They don't believe everything they hear. The effects of what people say on social media are strong. I think no one likes negative comments, or no one likes when someone says something, hey, look, you look like this, or there's some kind of conspiracy theory that isn't true. I don't think anybody enjoys that now. But I think back then the dagger hurt more and it stung more when someone said something rude or something mean online, because we just weren't used to it. I mean, we just weren't used to this form of communication.
Yeah, we typically didn't walk around in our daily lives having people say things like that to us.
No.
Yeah. And the accusation. So there were a couple of things about the online harassment of it. And that was, I think, the bulk of episode two, and was when you really delved into that. And one thing that I found fascinating was how Heather's mother really did a thorough job of breaking down how all of that works online, about the conspiracy theories and how it's like always two people who are the ones who are apparently, you know, doing these conspiracies, and all of the yachts that they bought and the sports cars that they bought with this non-existent insurance money. She had almost, like, it seemed by necessity, become an expert on how these groups operate and the inevitable conclusion of getting all of these strangers together and trying to solve a mystery, and how it can often just spiral completely out of control. Why did you think that was important, or was it you who thought it was important for her to talk that deeply about it, or is that something that she really wanted to get across in her own words?
We prompted her. We said, hey, we want to talk about this topic. We think it's important. It wasn't covered. And she had a lot to say about it. I mean, yeah. She was like, people thought we stole all this money. There's all these rumors. People are wanting to get information to write books. And it just went on and on.
There's two authors. Yeah. Right. I thought that was fascinating. Right. How right. She said authors came in and just to stir the pot up so they could like get fodder to write about.
And it's a popular story. I mean, it was getting national headlines. So you're going to get other people that have nefarious motives, and they might just say something just so they can spark something, and it gives them a reason to then write a book about it, you know, something like that. So, yeah, I mean, she went into very detail. And in the beginning, when I first started to talk to her and talk to other people about this cyber harassment, I didn't understand it either. I learned a lot. I was like, so who were the people propagating this? You know, I couldn't grasp it. I was like, was it Tammy Moore? Was it random trolls? Was it, you know, why are they doing this? What's their motive behind it? And when you really start to dig deeper into the layers, you realize it's almost like a cult. People that live online, that look for stories like this to, you know, they're now part of a group. And anytime you have that group dynamic, it's almost like a bully in a recess when they all start ganging up on a kid. It's almost like a mob mentality where people want to then to up the other people. They keep doing harsher and harsher things to the family till eventually it showed up where people were stalking them in person. It's not just enough to say a nasty comment. You got to show up, take a picture. We know where you are. And mm-hmm. I mean, this is a family that just lost their daughter. I mean, she's gone missing, and now they're dealing with all this harassment and people pointing fingers at them. I really thought that was a topic that needed to be addressed.
Yeah. And like I said, I really did appreciate that. And I see that play out. So it's really interesting, because I think the documentary, especially episode 2, does a really good job of explaining how social media in these cases, because this isn't unique to Heather's case, social media in these cases can often be a double-edged sword. Because, and her family said it, in the beginning, it was great. You use it to get information. You use it because Heather was 20, as you mentioned. Her parents, her sister, they don't know all of her friends. They don't know everybody that she's hanging out with. She's an adult. So you use social media to get the word out, to figure out who she might have been hanging out with, like who might know where she is, what's going on. Then once, you know, they kind of started the investigation, they used social media to plan searches and things like that. And it's so, so helpful. And then, as we see, it just devolves into this mess. And we see that all the time. And it's really interesting, because when I'm typically looking at cases, you know, I'm looking at them like this, you know, this is 12 years ago that this happened, right? So I'm coming in years later. A lot of the social media posts have been deleted. A lot of the groups are gone. So, you know, I'm not necessarily seeing the full depth of all of that that's going on. But I recently got involved in a local case here in Virginia of a missing woman, Mom to Kofle. And so that was the first time I was actually kind of on a case like that from day one and saw all of this happening in real time. And everything that they were talking about in that episode, I was like, oh, yeah, I've seen that happen. I've seen the conspiracy theories. I've seen the questions, you know, because I was covering the case and all the hearings. Her husband has been charged with her murder. She still hasn't been found as well, but we've been doing all the pretrial hearings and things, and I've been covering that. And I'm constantly getting similar questions, like about the life insurance policies, like about the money, about who's doing this with what money. And again, crazy conspiracies that just spin off and off and off and off. And it can be so detrimental to a case, you know, when you're really having all these people focus on folks who clearly have nothing to do with anything. So back to the rumors that, you know, I don't want to get too much into the rumors against Heather's family because they were clearly untrue and, you know, unfounded. What I am interested in is, was there any indication of how that originated? Like, I know that her roommate talked about how her original police interview maybe got out and kind of caused some things to get misconstrued, and that, you know, she had even been under the impression that Heather had been kicked out of her parents' house, which she later found out wasn't true. Do you think a lot of the misconceptions about Heather's family kind of came from there, like this idea that maybe she hadn't been getting along with them prior to her disappearance?
Yes, but I think what happened was, we don't have 100% proof of who put all those things online, but it had to have been someone from the case. Because anytime that you're charged with a crime, you're allowed to see the evidence. That's called discovery. So you're allowed to go through everything the police and have on you, everything the district attorney is going to use, not everything, but you know what I mean? The evidence, a lot of the evidence. And so if you're publishing this stuff and the other side doesn't want to publish it because they don't want you to know what they're going to be using against you in court, and you're sitting here publishing police investigations and, but omitting the parts that make you look bad and keeping the parts in that make someone else make, hey, look, this person, this is Heather's roommate, and she's saying that she didn't get along with her parents. She was kicked out of her house, which didn't end up being true. But taking that clip and putting it out there on YouTube, no one knows anything. No one has a clear understanding. So it's just information for people to go off of. And then they can start chatting. And there's a lot of these, I mean, a lot of people, and this can be good too. I mean, this can be reused in a very good way. People, web sleuths, people that are going through all these little informations and trying to find any little thing that might stick out that's just not, you know, 100% there. Mm-hmm. So people do this. They go through every little detail and they say, hey, this is a detail we need to look at more. Heather was kicked out of her house. What's going on with that? And then someone jumps in. Yeah, you know, I heard this rumor and this, and then it just goes. I mean, that's how it starts. I mean, but that's the thing. The person who started this had to have had access to the files of the case.
We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably. Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, Avocado Green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. Effecty offers compounded semaglutide, the same active ingredients as the popular name brands, but for up to 80% less. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. Getting started is so simple. Just fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a quick chat-based telehealth consultation. If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms. With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. Effecty gave me the opportunity to try their service out, and I have to say, it is just as easy as they say it is. I filled out the questionnaire, and within days, a package arrived at my door filled with everything I needed and detailed instructions. Their website also tells you everything you need to know, and you can always chat with your healthcare provider. It really is that simple and convenient. So if you're ready to level up your weight loss game, my listeners can now get $50 off of GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with code ATTWG at checkout. That's effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use the code ATTWG to get $50 off your first month of GLP-1 weight loss treatment. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. So get started today. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type a response or use their voice-to-text feature, and MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy. It's something that you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. And this is something that Ethan and I had been thinking about doing with our parents. We have this podcasting equipment, so we wanted to find a way for them to tell their story. But I love this because it's so regimented. They send them a question every week, and it just makes it really easy and turnkey. And it just seems like a great way for us to get our parents' stories down so that our children and our children's children can have them. So if you're interested, check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG at checkout for 15% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today. Has it ever felt like you're doing everything right? You're eating healthy, you're working out, and yet your energy still crashes, or your mood swings hit out of nowhere, like a twist in a crime story that you didn't see coming. Listen, I've been there too, and what I've discovered is that many of these issues could be tied to hormonal imbalances, like a hidden criminal lurking in the background, throwing everything off track. But here's the good news. This is one mystery that you can solve with Happy Mammoth. There's no need for a long investigation. Just take the free 2-minute quiz from Happy Mammoth. You answer a few questions about what you're experiencing and where you're at in life, and you'll uncover the real culprit behind your hormonal symptoms. And the best part? After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help you balance your hormones so you can finally feel like yourself again. According to a survey, after taking Hormone Harmony, 86% of women started to lose weight. 77% said that it improved their mood. And the biggest benefit? 100% of women surveyed said they're feeling like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ATTWG for 15% off today.
So it was the people, I can't say it was them for sure. No one has evidence. However, it's if someone is being prosecuted and they have access to the case files and they're able to put stuff out there, I mean, they could be the one whipping up the trolls. You know what I mean? They could be one feeding the trolls. So that's... That's powerful.
That was one thing that really struck me was that, you know, it seemed as though, like you said, it was somebody who was involved in the case, who was leaking all of this information that they likely got from Discovery, and you know, potentially had a bunch of sock puppet accounts, and like you said, was really stirring things up online in an effort to make the Moores look not guilty. On one hand, you have that, which is very sophisticated and, you know, smart if that's what your goal is, right? Like, I mean, it's a good way to kind of to get to that end game. But on the other hand, you have almost a complete lack of awareness about on how things work online, because, you know, you have their stories that they're giving to the cops, that the Moores are giving to the cops. The very first one saying, oh, well, no, the affair didn't matter. It wasn't really an affair because we were in an open relationship. Yet the cops can find from all of your devices in 2 seconds that that wasn't true, that it wasn't an open relationship. And there's mountains and pages of proof saying that this was an affair, you were devastated, he was in trouble, et cetera, et cetera. And I just found that dichotomy so interesting, that they were so like sophisticated about the electronic aspect of this in some ways, and just so shockingly bad at it in others. I don't know if you have any, like, what were your thoughts on that? Is that something that kind of came up for you as well?
We don't realize that there's cameras everywhere. Mm-hmm. Everybody has access. I mean, if the police, anybody can have access to our search history, our phones. I mean, there's so much information someone can get on anybody with their digital footprint. I think the Moores understood it, but it's just hard to grasp what, you know, any little mistake or any little thing you say or any little text you type. You can delete it, but it can just be found in other ways. I mean, analytics of your phone, you know, there's all these specialists that can do these things. Again, now people have a better grasp of it. But back then, I mean, now we know every house has a doorbell camera. Back in 2013, 14, no. I mean, it wasn't really a thing. There's a few people that had cameras.
A few people, yeah.
Right. Now we know that that exists. Before, back then, we understood text messaging just, I mean, when you think about it, 10 years, you know, you don't realize that, you know, how the phones can save these things on backup drives upon backup drives. You think, hey, if I just delete my text messages, they're gone. That's not true. You can go analyze deep into it and bring text messages that were deleted up and off your phone. So I think that they didn't understand the depth of what digital forensics can do to draw this information out of the devices. I think they were probably some bit conscious of, hey, look, be careful on where you text, because, and again, I don't want to get way too far into it, Tammy Moore, when she was making her alibi, she had all that digital stuff in mind. So she was conscious of that. But you're right. The police investigators were able to take all those devices and put together a story and tell a narrative just based off of emails, text messages, and digital footprints. Cell phones. I mean, the tower, where are you at? What location you at? I mean, all that stuff. I mean, the location, geo-targeting for location to say where you're at, to show that you were stalking somebody, is incredible what you can do with the digital forensics these days.
Yeah, it is. And I'm really glad that you included as much of Tammy's testimony as you did. I'm assuming Sydney didn't take the stand.
Did not take the stand.
Yeah. But
smart.
Yeah, smart, because clearly it didn't work out for Tammy. I really did appreciate that you included as much of her testimony as possible, because just like the prosecutor said, it really showed the jury, and now by extension, the audience, exactly who she is. Because when she was getting up there, the emotions behind her words really, really came through, regardless of what she was saying. And I think that the section that you showed of her going moment by moment and really how hard she tried to build this digital alibi was fascinating. Because she really thought she did something there. And she was like, hey, listen, there's no humanly possible way I could have done this in 5 minutes or, you know, whatever the time was. But it seems as though the jury, it saw right through it. And I think the audience, you know, will too when they watch it.
When I went to the courthouse, because we were able to film the interviews there,
yeah,
I sat down in that same chair that she testified in, and I looked at the jury, and I thought to myself, this would be scary to sit in front of 12 people and lie. And right. Try to be like, you know, it just, because it's 12 people, and it's just, you see where the chair is, and then you see where the jury is, and you got to explain yourself to them. You have to explain the timeline. You have to be like, everything that, all this evidence that you just heard for the last week or whatever, 10 days, is not true. That thing where, you know, Sydney lied about making that phone call. No, they were, you know, they roughed him up. And so she had to have an answer for every question. And I do think on a human level, I think that I call it like more like the human evidence versus the digital evidence, because there's just a lot of digital evidence. But I think that a jury, human evidence is still stronger. When you see someone's face and you go, wow, that person's lying, or they don't feel empathetic to the story, that can tell more people. We as human beings can understand if someone's lying to us better than showing, hey, look, here's the cameras, here's the text messages. I mean, you need that. I'm not saying you don't need that.
But you absolutely
amazing,
do.
Right. It's amazing how much.
I think people also tend to glaze over when you get so far into that, right? Like, because I'm sure the testimony about the camera that saw the truck and, you know, all of the pings on the cell phones. And I'm sure that while that was all incredibly 100% necessary and really, really helped secure the conviction, like I can guarantee you that the jury was glazed over for at least 50% of it. But when you have somebody, the accused especially, on the stand and just fighting for her life, literally and figuratively, like it, that is something that you're right, is just so compelling and really, really, I think would help the jury get a sense of what actually happened.
And it goes both ways. There's mm-hmm. defendants that are very likable and the evidence is not great. But if you can just give the jury one little thing to go off of, they'll justify, like, you know, there was a mistake, and the police made a huge mistake here. And like, but yeah, that guy, that person or guy or girl couldn't have done it. You know, he's too nice for a person. I just can't see it. I like that. You know, so I think likability and how someone comes off is more important than I think people understand and realize. But Tammy taking the stand and being as unlikable and unremorseful she was, really, I think, buried her more than any other piece of evidence out there. And frankly, I agree with you. I think it was entertaining to watch. It was her chance to refute all the evidence that came before. We were not able to sit down and interview her because she is in prison. We wrote letters to them. We asked them, can you guys, you know, can we, the warden does not allow cameras in prison in South Carolina, so we could not interview them. But I'm sure she would have liked to give her side of the story too. She's just that person. Yeah. So we wanted to include that in there for both reasons. You know what I mean? To say, hey, look, this is what Tammy thought happened. You should see that as well.
You said you wrote them letters. Did you ever get a response from them? Or see, I actually find that kind of surprising. I mean, with just the amount, because you also mentioned that, you know, when they were doing all those interviews, which again, ill-advised, just look at the Watts murders, like Chris Watts, you know, you don't really want to get up there with the tears and say, oh, I'm innocent. And, you know, it typically doesn't end well for you. So that does surprise me a little bit that they weren't still hungry to get their side of the story out. But maybe they've, you know, realized that it hasn't worked for them up to this point.
Right. We just weren't, they weren't, I don't know if they were, we tried telephone interview. I mean, mm-hmm. the state of South Carolina is very strict. We even tried to give a questionnaire, write us back. They
yeah,
weren't
yeah,
allowed.
Yeah.
No, they wouldn't allow
really?
It.
So, they wouldn't allow any of that.
Right. So in there, wow. I'm sure they would have liked to talk or gave us some kind yeah. of statement, but they just were not able to do so. We tried everything. Even, hey, write us a letter, answer these questions. Here's the questions that got sent back. You're not allowed to do that. You know?
Wow.
So, right.
Okay.
So, and they're like, they were not allowed to talk on any level.
All.
No.
That's fascinating. Now, you said that the appeal process is still going on. That could go on for a number of years. I mean, it's already been going on for years. And I know that the family isn't really, they're not exactly holding their breath for any new information on Heather until that process is exhausted. So is that still, you know, kind of where they are? What's Heather's family's stance on all of this now, I guess? I mean, are they just kind of mourning their daughter and waiting for the potential of answers? Or do you think they're just trying to move on without ever having them?
You work in this field doing podcasts, and you specialize in missing person cases. I think they're the hardest ones.
Yeah, they are.
I didn't understand this until I really got deep into this and I got to know the Elvis family. And oh, I mean, they're amazing, amazing people. They went through hell, but I didn't understand how hard it is not to have answers before working on this. I thought, well, they could probably assume what happened and just move on, or, you know, they have their closure with the convictions of what they got. It's not like that.
It's not. Yeah.
It's not like that. No. Having a place, having answers, I think is I don't want to say closure because it's not the word, but at least gives them a little bit of peace of mind of what happened to their daughter. If you look at Beth Holloway, I remember the Natalie Holloway story. Mm-hmm. She went through hell to get Johan Vandersloot to come to the United States and say, "I drowned and killed your daughter." She let him go probably 10 years out of prison in order just to get him to say those words and hear it in court. Cause they dropped the charges. I think it was wire fraud or something. He's in prison right now.
Weird, yeah.
He's in prison right now in Peru, and they would have extradited him after his sentence in Peru to serve 10 more years. She said, "Just tell me what happened to my daughter and we'll drop that down." So if that doesn't show you how important it is for a family to know where their daughter is, same with the Elvis family. Again, I don't want to give away too much information, but they would love to have more information where their daughter is. They're not, they didn't come across to me as vindictive people where, you know, like, well, let these people can rot in jail. And to them, I think they're very concerned about having answers to where their daughter is, where their daughter is. Now, the appeals process goes through layers is from what I was told from solicitor in South Carolina. They call the district attorney, the solicitor, Jimmy Richardson, who was an amazing interview. I mean, he was just very articulate and really, really, he's a gentleman. He's a really nice guy. He's a person that let us shoot in the courthouse and everything else. But he was telling us about the appeals process and how there's different layers and they get a certain amount of appeals. And then after those are all worn out, there's a possibility at that point that the Elvis family can approach them and say, "Hey, look, can you give us more information? We're willing to do this, willing to do that," you know. So maybe at that point too, one could flip on the other because maybe they're holding out hope for their case being overturned.
Yeah.
That could be something too. But yes, the case is ongoing and there's definitely information that can come out of those two individuals.
What I kind of started to say earlier with my co-host, my husband, who doesn't know about this. So while we're doing this interview, even though the episode will have come out by the time this airs, he and I have not recorded the episode yet on Heather. So he didn't watch the documentary with me when I was watching it to get ready for this. But he came home when I was literally watching the last 5 minutes of the last episode. You know, I'd gotten through it. I was like doing my thing, watching it. And when her family started talking about forgiveness and what they would do for answers. See, it's like, I was crying because
it's hard. It's hard to watch. And not only that, to edit that over and over again.
Yeah.
And to talk to Debbie and to talk to Debbie too. And just, And Morgan, I mean, it's hard.
Yeah. And so he came in, he's like, "Oh my God, what is happening in here?" And I was like, "It's the last 5 minutes. Don't worry about it." But I truly, that to me is what always gets me about these cases, just because you can feel the pain that comes from the unknown. The Natalie Holloway example that you brought up is perfect because at some point, a lot of these people, they don't care if they serve a day in prison. Like, they just want the answers. And I think withholding those answers from a family is, you know, one of the cruelest things that you can do. You know, when you have a typical straightforward, in the biggest quotes in the world, like murder, it's a tragedy that you can at least wrap your head around in some regard at some point. And there at least aren't all of these outstanding questions. Like, you'll know the cause of death. You'll know, you know, generally the time of death. And especially if the person ends up serving jail, okay, you know who did it. But with this, you just have all of these unanswered questions, and it's just a secondary torture to somebody who's already gone through the worst thing that somebody could go through, you know, losing a child in this case. And that perspective really, really, I thought was very powerful and a great way to end it, especially with the three members of the Elvis family, having kind of different takes on it, too, which I really appreciated. And Debbie was just like, well, I don't know, maybe we could offer them something, like they could go see their kids, or, you know, their kids could visit them in person. And then
she's the nicest person you ever meet, too.
My gosh.
She's a sweetheart. She's one of the nice. She's amazing. She went through hell, too. That. Yeah.
And, you know, just the way that the three of them are processing this in their own unique way, I think was a really powerful way to end it. So I guess before, because I do want to also talk about the new production company and kind of how you got into all of this to begin with. But the one thing that I do want to talk about before we get into that, just about the case itself, is Tammy's father, because that was another really great kind of episode three. I wouldn't say it's so much a reveal, because we don't know anything. We did see Tammy's father in episode one, when the police first went to the house to kind of see what was going on, if they knew anything about Heather's disappearance or anything like that, and how hostile he was at first. But then in episode three, you kind of really bring that home. And then the detectives and everybody who worked on the case kind of had their theories about that. You know, with Tammy's father being dead, based on your interviews, I would say, with everybody who's been involved in the investigation aspect of this, do you think there's any investigative road there? Like, is there any other place they can go with that at this point? 12 years.
Right. Tammy's father has passed away.
Right.
And when I spoke to Peter Sestier and did his interview, that was one person that he was adamant that had knowledge or had some part of doing it, or he had a feeling. He's not saying, oh, he did it, but forensically, as Peter told us, the truck went down. We really don't know who was in that truck. We don't. It's Sydney's truck, but we don't know who was in that truck. I think the other thing that I think you have to piece together was the picture that Tammy's cousin, Donald DeMarino, saw.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if what Donald DeMarino said was true, that she was laying on a gravel pit and Sydney took this picture. So you have to figure, why was he taking a picture of Heather? And he said to show Tammy more. I think that's what he said on the stand. So was Tammy involved in that murder in the truck? Was she, or was there someone else? We don't know.
Right.
I mean, those are things that to piece together. Right. And Peter Sestier saying, look, I think the way that I went over to the house the first day, something just didn't sit right with me. So the way he talked, the way he acted, I wish I could have been able to speak more to him and ask him, you know, more questions. So we don't know.
Yeah. So is that something, the possible involvement of Tammy's father, is that something that investigators started thinking about in hindsight, or was this something, I mean, did they ever actually look into him during the initial investigation while he was alive?
I think he died pretty soon after. I don't know.
Yeah, I think like 2-3 months,
right,
something like
right,
that.
Right. Yeah. So there's, you know, and I was talking to Peter about this too. Mm-hmm. Who was one of the lead detectives on he was the lieutenant sergeant at the police department. So overseeing a lot of this stuff. You know, when you're doing an investigation, everyone expects the police to just jump and have all the answers right away and just know and just figure it out. It goes through a process, and there's legal protections too. There, you have to have warrants. You have to have probable cause. You just can't just go and question. You have to ask people, do you want to come in and give us information?
Yeah, because they don't have to.
Right.
And I think that's what a lot of people don't realize.
No.
And that is something that, you know, again, in the case that I've been and dealing with, the husband who is now going to stand trial for murder has never been interviewed by police because they didn't bring him in for questioning immediately when his wife went missing. By the time they kind of got around to it, for lack of a better term, he was like, no, you know what? I see where this is going. No, thank you. And so for months, I would get comments of like, well, just make the police give him a polygraph. Like, just, you know, why won't the police do this? Why won't the police do that? And I was like, they can't, you know, because that's not how it works. You don't actually have to talk to the cops. You certainly don't have to take a polygraph test. You know, there are all these things that I think people think that, well, the police can just go and do this. And they truly can't. And it is interesting how much of the interview process and kind of the initial parts of an investigation like this are really voluntary. Because, you know, they were never, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, the Moores, when they, or Sidney especially, when he was giving all those statements, like he was never under arrest, like he was never detained. I mean, he was there completely voluntarily.
Yep.
Yeah. And so, you know, they got obviously a lot out of him that helped a lot later. But Tammy's father definitely doesn't strike me as somebody who would have just willingly come down to the station to talk about any of this.
No. And I think, you know, they went to the house and, you know, Tammy showed him around. And then, you know, the whole part with the cameras, you know, they got rid of those cameras. What possibly, you know, so like, but again, I talked to Peter about it. They weren't a suspect at the time. You don't, you know, you'd have to go get a warrant and this and that, you know, you don't notice these, you know, they get a phone call. Heather could have still been alive for all they'd known and just ran off. Did, you know, they don't know the next day or 2 days, like, you know, something really, really bad. It can't put the whole piece of the puzzle together. In hindsight, it's very easy, you know, like we could look back after doing this podcast, we can both watch it and go, why did I say this? Or I should have said this. And it's easy to do that. But at the time, I mean, there is a procedure you have to follow. The father didn't live long after they thought possibly he could have been involved. So possibly he could have had a lot more information and now he's gone. It's a hard pill to swallow. It is.
It is.
Because, like,
is,
he, when you watch this, like, God, this could have, he could have had more information. He could, you know, they could have.
And that is always tough with these cases, you know, where there are still answers out there and main people involved do pass away because they do take those answers with them. And we see that time and time again. Obviously, in any unsolved missing persons case, as the years go on, people are going to pass away. I mean, that's just how life works. And so the longer they stay unsolved, the harder it is to get all of the answers that you may want. With that said, I never, ever want to make it sound like it's impossible because we've seen time and time again cases, you know, that are cracked after decades.
It goes both ways. There's people who are young at the time of the crime who grow up and might have a change of conscience.
Exactly.
There could have been a friend that went over to the Moore's house and had, you know, might have heard something. They have kids who are younger right now, who are older. They might say, you know what? This is what happened. I'm going to come out and say something, or I'm going to push my parents to give more information so they can possibly get out of prison earlier if they're willing to make a deal. There's people, like, you know, a lot of people I talk to that, you know, watch the documentary, like, I think Sidney's going to eventually crack. There's no way this guy can hold on and this 10 more years in prison. Prison's a hard place to be. Another thing that can always happen too, and this is why it's important to keep these cases in people's conscience, like doing things exactly what you're doing. Someone listens to this podcast or watches a documentary, let's say they end up in prison in 5 years for whatever reason, and they're having lunch or whatever at the lunch hall or in the cell, they're a cellmate with Sidney or Tammy, and they have all this information about the case and they start asking them, and people slip up in prison all the time and say something and it might get picked up on a microphone, it might get picked up by another person, a guard might hear it. You never know. I mean, you have to keep your mouth shut the whole time and always look over your back.
Yeah.
The information can come forward, and that's we have this, why we can keep these stories alive.
Absolutely. And I mean, there's an old cold case adage, which is, you know, cold cases are often solved by two things, a change in circumstance and a change in technology. Like you said, you know, people have relationships that they're trying to protect that maybe 20 years down the road, not really trying to protect anymore. And then also with technology, obviously DNA, you know, if that's something that's involved in a case, obviously that can lead to more information decades down the line. The other thing that I've learned over the past, you know, 5 years of doing this is there are so many people who don't know that they might know something. I mean, I over the years get people going like, oh my gosh, like I actually knew that person. I had no idea that this even happened. Because you think that when something that's so crazy and devastating, and even in a case like Heather's that did get a lot of media attention, there are still, I guarantee you, a million people who lived down the street from the Elvis family who had no idea that any of this went on. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. and the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. So I've been using Armoire, and I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now as I'm recording this, and it's a great idea. You don't have to commit to buying the clothes, but you can really start to explore your own personal style. Like if there's a trend or something that you've been wanting to maybe try but not commit to, this is absolutely perfect. Because if you don't like it, you just put it back in the bag and get something else. Because we've all been there. You open your closet, and even though it's packed, you feel like you have nothing to wear. And with Armoire, that's a thing of the past. They make it effortless for all women to turn heads with stylish everyday looks. You can rent high-quality designer clothing for any occasion, and it's all tailored to your personal style. Plus, you don't have to do laundry, and you don't have to go shopping. It truly could not be any easier. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month, which is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/ATTWG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends that they'll deliver discreetly right to your doorstep. And you can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with promo code ATTWG. It is wild how different each one of their gummies feels. Their sleepy time gummies knock me out in about 15 minutes flat with no hangovers, no grogginess, and I just wake up feeling amazing. Oh, and the Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for those days when nothing's going right and you just need to hit the reset button on your crap mood. What makes these different is how they pair THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're not going to just find gummies like this in a dispensary, or anywhere for that matter. And they have gummies for literally everything. Immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, and sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics' True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results blew my mind. I was very wrong. If you remember, I was worried about my brain and not my cardiovascular health. And it turns out, my brain's fine, but my cardiovascular health needs work. But luckily, my biological age was really right on track with my actual age, which is good because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means that you have a lot of control over it. The True Age test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, and it was eye-opening. And I will say, like, I definitely picked up the workouts after I learned that my cardiovascular health isn't as good as I thought it was. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, and it was just a quick, painless finger prick. that I made Ethan do because I was too scared. You send it off in a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And there's always a chance that they can be flipping through Prime Video trying to find something to watch. They come across this documentary and like, oh, that name sounds kind of familiar. They start watching and go, oh my God, like I actually know this person. I know that person. And they could very well have information that they didn't know they had.
Right. Exactly.
So yeah. And that's why, you know, I do find this kind of thing very very important because it not only helps keep the memory of these people alive and, you know, tells their story and shows who they were and all of their different facets, but it does give the opportunity for people to learn about it and potentially come forward if they do have information.
And just to touch on that, you know, I've always told people, they're like, well, what good does a documentary about a case like this do? And I said two things. It brings awareness about the topic that we're trying to cover, which is online harassment. And there's other lessons in this story as well. If you can, you know, watch it, you can learn from. If you're a young girl, you know, everyone's young and do dumb things. I did, you know, so if you can watch and be like, hey, maybe maybe shouldn't do something like that. That's good awareness that we can bring out. And then the other thing it does is shines light on the case. So you use it. Is true crime entertainment? Yes. Do people learn from it? Yes. And does it shine light on a case? Yes. So it's not just one thing, podcasts or documentaries that do it. People want to keep these things fresh in their heads. I don't know why, you know, as human beings, we're so drawn to these stories and we want, you know, I think it's just for the betterment of the community. You don't want these things to happen in your community. So you want to learn about this so you can avoid it or help solve these problems. I think that's why people are drawn to it. I do.
You're right. It's so tough being a creator in this space because you really have to toe the line between entertainment and the ability to help people learn things, right? You don't want to exploit a situation. You don't want to exploit a family, a victim, anybody like that. But, you know, you also have to keep people
attention.
Entertained right, and their attention. I mean, your documentary is what, 2 hours and 45 minutes?
Yeah.
Something like that. You know, listen, with the attention span that we have, like, that's a lot of TikTok videos.
Right. I'm surprised you watch it one day. Yeah.
I did. I was actually really impressed with myself. But you know, and so you have to keep it compelling. But I do think that there are, like you said, lessons that can be imparted. And what I really loved was when Morgan talked about how she had to let go of some of the anger that she had toward her sister, because victim blaming is something you never want to do and you need to be so careful of it. But you can also really empathize with a sister who said, oh my God, like if you had just not done this, like
I can't imagine. I have a sister and I have two brothers. I know. I mean, I can't imagine. And she's a strong person. And she uses her platform for good. You know, I think she's a very good advocate for victims and other people who went through this. Cause I told Morgan, I said, you know, Morgan, you show me strength when you talk about you're able to forgive for something like this. And I can't forgive my brother for not calling me back on time. Like, you know what I mean?
I know,
or whatever my smaller problem, right. Whatever my smaller problems are. Like, I'm like, you know, I had a bad day or I had a bad business deal or something. And like, small. I'm like, or I can't get over something that happened 20 years ago. I'm like, small.
Yeah.
I'm like, just get over it. You know, someone said something mean to me or something, you know, like just, I mean, compared to what she went through. I mean, come on. It shows you that forgiveness is without it. It's impossible to continue living. I think that she shows that.
But yeah, but I do appreciate, you know, the fact that the family in general, but especially her, like they weren't trying to deify Heather. And that's so easy to do because, you know, you want to say like, this is this amazing person, which she was, like she was loved, which she was, but she was still a human and she maybe didn't make all the best choices sometimes. And none of us make all the best choices sometimes. And so I really appreciated that they try to, you know, portray Heather. And I think this is something throughout the entire documentary, like try to portray Heather in a realistic light, you know, and not just say like she lit up a room, you know, like she had her issues and she maybe did things that like weren't the best, but that's fine. That doesn't make her deserving of what happened. And it doesn't make her less deserving of getting justice. And I think that that's such an important lesson that can be imparted in media like this. And so I appreciated that.
Yeah. And every time this case gets brought up and you go in the comment sections right away, it's like, she should not have been sleeping with a married man. And this is what you get for doing this and this and this. You should.
No, that is not what you get. Like, yes, don't sleep with married men in general. And also if they say they're in an open relationship, it's a lot.
Well, here's the thing too. Right. And this is something, right. And this is something that I always say, she was 20 years old. I think maybe,
oh my God, yeah,
maybe 19 when she met and he was 37. It's not even just the age gap difference. Cause I mean, I think, but when someone's 19 or 20 years old, you're not developed yet. I mean, you just think, I think of all the dumb things I did at 21. You didn't even think, I think of all the dumb things I do at 40, you know, like at my age, I mean, my 40s, like, you know, like, I mean, when you're 21, you're just going through life and you're trying to, you believe people. When someone says, oh, I'm in an open relationship with my wife, you're like, oh yeah, I've seen that on TV a few times.
Right.
You know,
like, that's a
you
thing.
Don't realize people lie and things like that. And like, why would they want, you know, you don't understand, you just don't get these things. I mean, it shouldn't cost you your life or you for you to go missing. But that is something that people always bring up in the comments. There's like, you know, she shouldn't have been messing with a married man. I'm just like,
yeah,
I
mean,
come on. You have to show that part in the story, but you have to understand that, you know, there's like what we brought that the roommate, he brought those points up.
I really appreciated that because that's a girlfriend like who's just
that's
like
a friend, man.
I didn't get it. Yeah. That guy was gross. Yeah, I don't know what he was doing.
And you know what? But he was saying these things around like, hey, look, we're in an open relationship, telling everyone. If you're hanging out with somebody at work or and like you're open about it, it doesn't look like it's an affair. It looks more like you are in an open relationship.
Hey. Right. Like, yeah, that's your like creepy older boyfriend. Like it seems like that's just
he's just married, you know, right.
Yeah. And that happens. And listen, you know, in the restaurant industry, like you do have all of these people kind of like of all these different age ranges and backgrounds all put together too. And so you always do have kind of like a weird dynamic there a lot of the time. But yeah, so before I know we're running a little bit low on time, but I'd love to just kind of back up and talk about your production company and how that came about and how you kind of made the switch into the true crime space and one, what brought that about in general and to like what made Heather's story the first one that you decided to tackle?
Well, these are good questions. So I worked in the creative field in making, you could call it advertisements, explainer videos, demo videos, direct response videos. I did a lot of post-production work, editing graphics, illustrations, animations since 2008, 2009 is when I quit my job. So, and then started this, I started a little boutique firm and we had a lot of clients, a lot of like all ranges, big, small startups. And I worked in that for a while up until about 2015. And then software kind of just did, I mean, nowadays, think about this is 2015, software kind of just put us out of business. But now with AI and all this other stuff in the way, so like, you know, the stuff we do just kind of got replaced. So my brother's an attorney. So I ended up saying, you know, can I learn more about law? possibly might want to go to law school, but I also started a business and you have a business here. So maybe I can, you know, learn about the law business and I could help lawyers set up their businesses. And that's what I did. So I started with my brother. Then I had a few other law firms that I worked with, got into a little personal injury as well. I mean, that's big on marketing and sales. And I really learned about law. Like before I started, I didn't even know the difference between a municipal court and a circuit court. I'm like, I asked my brother, I'm like, what's a municipal court and a circuit? He's just like, okay, this is the city, this is the county, this is how this works. I mean, I had to learn like law 101. This is back, you know, 7-8 years ago, you know, so that's what I did. And then I have that background in production, and I always loved true crime documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the few documentaries I think I watch. I used to watch a lot more documentaries before YouTube exploded. Now there's just so many good YouTube videos, you know, like you don't really need to watch documentaries like you used to, but that's what got me into true crime. And then this story, I kind of had a little incident, a personal incident where I kind of experienced a little bit of online harassment from like kind of like a family member's crazy ex-girlfriend type deal.
Okay.
And I was like talking to my brother about this. And I was like, you know what? Like they're like, I didn't understand like people can use Facebook to do this, to start rumors about you that aren't true, to like tell friends that, you know, that you haven't talked to in years that you said this about them or that about them. I was just like, I didn't even use my privacy settings. I was like, oh yeah, it's just Facebook. You know, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
They can use Facebook to track where you're at, what you're doing, who you're hanging out with. I'm just like, whoa. I'm like, there's no documentary about this. We, you know, I want to make a documentary about this. So I started investigating, and that's how I came across the Elvis case. And once I started looking at the Elvis case, the other thing that really drew me to it was just how bizarre Tammy Moore and Sidney Moore's relationship was, like the handcuffing to the bed and the tattoo.
Yeah, we didn't get into all that. That was
right. It's a dynamic. It's a dynamic story. I think that's why it drew so much national press. It just had so much to it. It just had a lot to it. And there was no well done documentary yet made. It was, you know, you have tons of like, you know, I can go on about how the documentary industry is shifting as well. You know, Netflix was putting out a lot of documentaries around that time, like the early 2020s and late teens around that time. They're doing less now. They're doing more like that Dahmer one where they have actors, docudramas, you guess you could call them. They're doing more like stuff like that. But before they're doing a lot of these type of documentaries. So I was like, God, I'm like, you know, this Elvis case would be a very interesting one to look into the online harassment part of it. And then I said, I want to start a documentary film company that specializes in true crime documentaries, but looks for stories like the Elvis story where we're touching on a certain topic. So for this one is online harassment. The next documentary that we have that will come out probably next year is called The Dine and Dash Dater. And it's about a guy who would go on these dating apps, meet girls, wine and dine them, and then he just take off and stick them with the bill. This is in Los Angeles.
So kind of like a Tinder swindler kind of situation, like on a lower scale?
On a lower scale. But the reason why I think it would really resonate is a lot more and more people are using dating apps to meet people. So it tells a story in the topic about the dangers of it. I think dating apps are great. I'm not going off and be like, never touch a dating app. You're just going to get killed and mugged. I mean, there's people who met their significant other on this. I don't want to say like a lot of people have. I mean, people have good experiences and people have bad experiences. I don't want to go and just label it. But I think safety is going to be an issue as more and more people meet online. If it's not dating apps, social media, whatever else. And this story has kind of it has a element to it that made it go viral. We've already done most of the interviews. We have a few more left. But once you kind of get deeper into the story and you see kind of the people involved into it, you're just like, wow, this is a very interesting story, very dynamic. You're trying to figure out what the motive of this guy was. Was he doing this for, you know, to get back at women, or was he doing this for free meals, or some people thought he was a hero. Some people thought he was like, women do this to guys all the time. What he did was nothing was wrong. So you had, you know, it's one of those stories where you have a lot of argument to it of, you know, what's right, what's wrong. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to find these type of stories.
Yeah, I do think that's interesting, because I remember, because I lived in New York City in like 2007-ish.
I was there too around that time.
Really?
We probably bumped into each other.
Probably. It's a small, you know, it's a huge city, but it's a small town. Like you, because you do. But, and I remember because that was like right in the heyday of like Gawker and, you know, all the blogs. Like this, it was like before.
I remember those. Yeah.
Right? Like, it was like, it was Web 2.0. It was like the blog. And I specifically remember like this woman writing a blog post for like Gawker or Jezebel or one of those sites talking about how she would schedule dates 5 nights a week to get free meals.
I remember that.
Yeah. And she was like this hero, you know, they're like, yeah, girl, like get it, you know, in this economy. I think that will be really interesting.
Oh, right. There's the other element of it. Right.
Yeah.
It happens the other way. Who pays for the bill? I mean, you're stuck with the bill. And a lot of these diners were like, you have to pay. Cause like you ate with this guy, it's your date.
Yeah.
He didn't steal. Like maybe you just had a bad date.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
So
yeah,
right.
that's really interesting.
It goes both ways. So yeah, we're trying to find stories that can really shine light on another topic. You know what I mean? So we want to use a story to also bring awareness to like online harassment, dating app. We're trying to find those stories. I'm not saying every story is going to be like that. Some stories just might naturally be good the way they are, but that's kind of our goal here. So,
yeah, I think it's really interesting because I really did appreciate the amount of time that I think was spent on the Facebook group aspect of this case, the online harassment that bled into real life harassment, which we should say, I mean, definitely doesn't happen in all the cases like this, but it's so important because the online aspect of it does in so many of them that it is. It's like it is an actual issue and it does need to get discussed because I don't think it's something that a lot of people necessarily realize because, you know, you have people who are following like this particular case because it happened in their hometown or whatever. So they don't know that, this is going on with 20 other similar cases and it's all the same thing. You know, it's like it's almost like they're working off the same playbook without realizing it. Such a widespread issue. So I think that this is really good to shine light about that and really educate people who kind of like to be armchair detectives and online sleuths, which I'm certainly not knocking.
No, I think there's a lot of good coming out of that too. There's a lot of good coming out of that. Absolutely.
So much good because, you know, just as an example, like one of the main reasons that all of this kind of got started is because what we see in a lot of missing persons cases, especially a case like Heather's, where it's an adult, and especially where you've got kind of this like free spirit kind of person who police could be like, well, yeah, maybe she just took off. Maybe she just did whatever. A lot of times they don't get investigated with the amount of seriousness that they need to. And a lot of times it's really the online kind of outcry, the online push that can get the police moving in these cases. And so it's so, so beneficial in that regard. But it's
100%. Yeah, I completely agree with that statement.
It's good to see a fuller picture of what that can turn into. And you know, we're seeing it too now with the Karen Reed trial, right? I mean, that was so much, that really kind of burst onto the national consciousness because of all of the online advocates, right? But then we're also see a lot of lines being crossed in that case as well. So again, it's an important thing. And so I think that if nothing else, that's a great reason to watch this and to just see how that affects real people and what it is like on the other side of the screen. The Elvis family did a great job of explaining how all of that affected them, their day-to-day life, while they're going through, again, the worst thing they can possibly be going through and how much energy they then had to split off and spend on this aspect of it. So,
Absolutely. Yeah, it was really great.
I don't want to keep you too long, but I really appreciate you coming on to talk about Heather's case and really work on keeping her case alive because this isn't over. You know, it's not a case that's been completely concluded. Although, as we said in the beginning, there has been partial justice, if you want to call it that. So thank you so much for making the documentary and coming on and talking about it and keeping Heather's story out there.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And if anybody wants to follow us on Instagram, we're going to be posting it's True Case Films. True Case Films is put into your Instagram and we're going to be posting a lot. We're like, we put the movie out, okay?
Yeah.
And now we have all this content that we have to, you know, go through, just, you know, press things. We have so much cool things from our screening. We have, you know, we have a lot of footage that we didn't use in the documentary that we want to put out on our social media pages as well. So, you know, the people are going to really get a very good view of what happened in this story. And there, we are going to get it on other platforms. We're just, this is just starting. This is the normal way of how movies come out. And a lot of times people are like, well, when is it going to be on these other platforms? And, you know, when is it going to be here? When is it going to be there? The way it works is we have to put it out on Apple and Amazon, get traction. People are buying it. People are watching it. We want to get it on other streaming platforms as well. So, you know, follow us and we'll get it on those. You know, we're working on that. It takes time. They're getting a lot choosier on what content they put on. And so there's a lot that goes into this. So, I mean, we appreciate the support. If you do want to purchase it, it's $7 for the whole season. But if you do want to wait, eventually it will be on an ad-supported system. I mean, if you don't mind watching the ads, I mean, I'm more, yeah, ready to buy, but everyone's different. We're getting it out there more and it's just the beginning. So we're going to have a lot of cool information going.
Wait until it comes onto an ad-supported network. But if you can, I do recommend downloading it now. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's 3 episodes, again, totaling about 2 hours and 45 minutes. The depth and the care that went into the interviews, it really sets it apart. It's absolutely worth watching. So make sure you guys do that. And then also give your Instagram handle one more time.
Crew Case Film.
All right. And then the name of the film is Vanished, the Heather Elvis Case, right?
Just type it into Google and it'll pop up and you just can see all the information about it, the reviews, if you like to read them and if you want to watch it, all the links are there.
All right. Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Michael. I really appreciate you sitting down with me today. Yeah. So thank you so much. And if you're watching or listening to this interview and you haven't listened to our episode on the Heather Elvis case,
definitely check that out.
Yeah. And obviously I used the documentary as one of my sources because, you know, beautiful. I didn't spend 3 hours watching what took months and months and months for you to do for nothing.
Perfect. No, I'm happy. Get the word out. You know, as much, and I'd like to hear your perspective on it too. So that's the great thing about making a documentary. Everyone views it and understands it different. So that's the cool thing about it.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you so much again.
Thank you.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.